This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica stations. And watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. An effort by Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein to force vote recounts in key battleground states has netted nearly $7 million in funding in just a few days. A group of computer scientists had urged the Clinton campaign to challenge results in three key states where the former Secretary of State lost by just a few tens of thousands of votes, resulting in her Electoral College loss. But it wasn't until Stein led the effort that Clinton belatedly announced she would join in. At the heart of the matter is that raw exit polling data from states where Clinton was expected to win, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, was inconsistent with vote counts. Donald Trump, who was declared the Electoral College winner and who has lost the popular vote to Clinton by more than 2 million votes, has denounced the recount efforts. But Trump has also claimed, with no evidence, that he would have won the popular vote if millions of people had not voted, quote, illegally. My guest is David Moore, senior fellow with the Carsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire. He's a former vice president of the Gallup organization and managing editor of the Gallup poll, where he worked from 1993 until 2006. His books include The Opinion Makers and Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. And he also writes for iMediaEthics.org. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, for those of us who don't really know how these polls work, let's talk about it. There are the polls that look at likely voters well ahead of the election to determine how people who might be likely to vote will vote, to try to predict what will happen on election night. Then there are exit polls that are carried out, I understand, by a company that takes data from people who've just voted, ask them how they voted, and then shares that, not with the public, but just with networks. So is that accurate, that we have these two kinds of polling that is available to us to try to glean what is going to happen and what might have already happened at the election?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Both the exit polls and the pre-election polls are the ones that we rely on. And both sets of polls predicted that Clinton would win in those three states.
So what did the polls from these three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, show?
Well, the exit polls in all three states indicated that Clinton would win by anywhere from 3 to 5 points. And then you had the pre-election polls, for example, 538.com, which is Nate Silver's website where he aggregates poll results. And based upon the state poll results, he projects who the winner might be. So those are pre-election polls. And in those polls, they also projected Clinton to win by around 3 to 5 points in each state.
And so how do you explain the discrepancy then? And actually, let's talk about how exit polling data is gathered and who has access to it. Who actually gathers exit polling data and how do they gather it?
Well, the five networks and the Associated Press all form a consortium called the National Election Pool, NEP. And the NEP then is a group of people who are hired by the five networks and Associated Press. And they run out of Somerville, New Jersey, where Edison Research at and Joe Lenski is the head of that particular operation. So what they do is they select the states where they think there's going to be competition. So that turned out to be 28 states where they thought there might be some competition. And they did exit polls in those 28 states. And what that means is that they selected a random set of precincts in each state. And they sent interviewers to those precincts. And as voters had completed their voting and were leaving the ballot box area, the interviewers would approach every 10th or every 15th voter, depending upon the individual precinct, and give that voter another ballot. And that ballot would be the ballot, a secret ballot, but it would be for the NEP, for the exit poll operation. Then the people would fill it out and they would deposit it. So it was all secret. Nobody knew who voted for whom. And after, at the end of the day, then all of those votes are called in, put into a computer and into the central computer there in Somerville, New Jersey. And then they, based upon those polls, the early exit polls, the exit poll operation will project the winner. If the exit polls by themselves show a very close race, then rather than just project the winner on the basis of the exit poll, the operation will combine the exit poll operation or the exit poll results with actual vote count until they get to the point when they think that they can comfortably project the winner without being wrong.
So there's two kinds of data. There's the raw data from the exit polls that is directly from people who've just voted. Then there's the actual vote counts. And when there's a discrepancy between the two, the networks basically use some methodology to try to combine those numbers?
Yes, they would combine them initially. For example, they would go to, let's take Precinct A, for example. And in Precinct A, maybe they did a poll and it showed that Trump was up ahead by 10 points. And then when the vote count comes in, they take a look at Precinct A and they say, well, how did our exit poll compared with the vote count? And if it was pretty close, then they have more confidence in the results of the exit poll. If it shows that Trump was doing worse than he had been in their exit poll operation, then they will adjust the numbers. And they take a look at all of the precincts where they did their polls to see whether or not the polls and the exit poll numbers diverge, and if so, by how much. And if it's still unclear, if it's still too close, then they essentially just wait until the raw vote count comes in to a point when they say, well, based upon what we expect the outstanding vote to come in, how many votes are outstanding still, we think that we can go ahead and project the winner. So the exit poll operation is really a very mixed, and you have to get the early exit poll results to figure out what they showed versus what they might show later in the evening after having been combined
with the
vote count.
So the raw exit polling data is not made available to the public. This is basically proprietary data that the networks use in order to be able to have their horse race election coverage. However, why would there be a discrepancy between exit polling data and actual vote counts? A big enough discrepancy that would make you wonder, right? I mean, unless people who were being surveyed after they exited the polls were lying.
Yeah, well, it could be that they're lying. It could be that there's what they call a non-response bias. For example, not everybody's going to participate. And suppose that the people who voted for Trump were less likely to be willing to participate in the exit poll operation. Then you may get a whole lot more Clinton voters in your exit poll you're not trying to. It's that way because the Trump voters are maybe more unwilling to participate in the exit poll. So that's one possible explanation, what they call the shy Trump voter, as though somehow the Trump voter would say, no, I don't want to tell anybody who I voted for because I'm ashamed or because they don't trust the exit poll. That's one explanation. But as it turns out, in all five, in those three, particularly in those three states, the exit polls showed that Clinton would win with a very solid majority. I mean, a solid lead.
So this is Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Yes.
So the exit polls in those three very key states, these are people being surveyed right after they come out of the polling booth. Early exit poll data showed that she would win. When the votes began to be counted, those states went to Trump by margins of some tens of thousands of votes per state.
That's correct. And usually in the margin, the swing was anywhere around 4 to 5, 6 points. They were all statistically significant, which means that assuming that the exit polls that were getting a random sample of voters, you wouldn't expect there to be that big of a swing of vote. See, you're always going to have not a perfect
right
poll.
The discrepancy could be in the noise, as statisticians say. It would be within the noise, but these were statistically significant. They were above the noise that it would make you wonder, right?
Yes, exactly.
And
you
then
would. And
I understand on top of that, there is this effect that has been noticed, not even just in this election, but in recent elections in general, something called a red shift. This sounds ominous, and we mean red shift meaning red Republican, not red communist. What is the red shift?
Well, taking into consideration that blue represents Democrat and red represents the Republicans, the red shift means that when you take a look at the polls that show a certain margin in favor of the blue candidates, the Democratic candidates, and then when you look at the vote count and find out that that margin either has been reversed or is significantly less, then you're moving from a blue advantage, a Democratic advantage, to a more Republican advantage or red shift. So that's what they're talking about. So out of the 24 states that, I mean, out of the 28 states that were polled, there were 24 examples of red shifts, which is really amazing. You wouldn't expect that to occur. I think one in 6,000, something like that. But apart from that, all, when you think about the statistically significant shifts that occurred, there were 12 of them, and they all occurred. They were all red shifts and no significant blue shifts. Hmm. In no case did a Democrat do better in the vote count than they did in the exit poll.
So if these discrepancies were truly random, you might see about half-ish go the swing toward the Democrat by a few points and about half swing toward the Republican by a few points because of expected discrepancies between early exit polling data and actual vote counts. And we see in 24 out of 28 states where exit polling was done, it went Republican, and 12 of those were statistically significantly all red shifted. Wow.
That's right.
That just seems uncanny.
Yeah, it is. It's and so the only explanation that can be given, the only plausible explanation that the exit polls offer, they don't think that they've got bad samples. I mean, that could be one, that they just don't get a good sample, and that the sample that they've gotten from each state, the sample of precincts, is disproportionately Republican. But when they draw the samples, when the exit poll operation draw the samples initially, they compare those samples with previous elections to see how well those samples represent the vote distribution in previous elections. And so they've got good samples. There's never a question about that. The only real question that the exit poll people, Joe Lenski and his group, can claim is that somehow they've got a non-response bias. That is, that the people who don't respond are disproportionately Republican. And they would have to say that that's true in 12 out of the 28 states. And it never happened in the red shift, excuse me, a blue shift. It never happened in the opposite direction in the other state. And that's kind of difficult to accept. Hmm. So we don't know if there's something wrong, but we can say that these results cast doubt upon the vote count, and this, that it's worthwhile.
It's not just the presidential race that was impacted, right? I mean, this control of the Senate was expected and predicted as per exit polls to go to the Democrats with 51, total of 51 seats. And does this exit polling discrepancy show up in Senate races too?
Yes, it showed up in the Senate races, and the Republicans would have, I think, according to the exit polls, the Democrats should have picked up three more seats. And had they done that, they would have 51 in the Senate, and they would have majority control. But the exit poll differed from the vote count. Yes, that's what has got a lot of people, or a lot of election integrity experts, really concerned that maybe there's something going on with the vote count. And I think it was in part that concern that led Jill Stein to go ahead and ask for a recount in the three states that she did.
Right. And Jill Stein, being a candidate in the on the ballot in those states, can actually ask for a recount because you have to be a candidate. It's only candidates that can require the recount, and then they have to pay for it. Clinton very reluctantly joined, it seemed, into the effort. And I want to quote from the article, David, that you wrote in imediaethics.org. We linked this entire article on our website. The name of the article is Why the Exit Polls Sow Doubt Among the Vote Count. And you calculated the probability of such a lopsided distribution, that is where you have so many states where the polling is off, is only 1 in 13,110. Stated another way, there is a better than 99.98% probability that such a distribution would not happen if both the exit polls and the vote counts were roughly the same. All right, so there's a lot of doubt that's being cast on this. Let me ask you this: of the states where the election results seemed dubious, how many use electronic voting machines? Is that something that you've looked at? Because many experts have pointed out that such machines are easy to hack. Some of them so easy to hack that a few years ago, the state of California basically banned a specific brand of machines because they were so easy to hack. Is there any kind of correlation that we know with the electronic voting machines and these discrepancies?
Well, there is some anecdotal information that suggests that the I think the voting machines in those who used a certain kind of voting machine in Wisconsin, that were more hackable, had 7% greater support for Trump than in the other districts. But I don't think there's been a systematic effort to look at it. I think it'll be a lot better when you do a recount in those three states to figure out what's going on. The problem is, There are ways in two of the states, in Wisconsin and Michigan, there are paper ballots. Even though they are counted by machine, there is a paper ballot trail so that they can, in fact, count the paper ballots. What I read today is that the Wisconsin Commission has refused to order all of the precincts to use a hand count and has said they can go ahead and use a machine count or a hand count. Well, a machine count is the problem. So you don't, if your machine has already been hacked or changed, just going through and counting again is not going to change anything. So what Stein wants to do, and she's being advised by some very savvy experts on election voting, is she wants to have a paper ballot count. And in that way, you can really check on it. Now you can do that in Wisconsin, and you could do it in Michigan. In Pennsylvania, it's more difficult because Pennsylvania has 2/3, 44 of its 67 counties have DRE machines, direct relating electronic voting anyway, and they don't have any kind of a paper backup. So it's only in about 1/3 of them is there a way to check on the paper ballots. So,
but you might have some counties to compare, right? I mean, if you look at the vote tallies and see some significant patterns between precincts that use those machines and those that have a paper trail, you might be able to determine something.
Well, you might be able to, but it's really difficult because it depends on where they're located. You know, are they located mostly in urban areas and so on? So, I think it's going to be more difficult with Pennsylvania. If Wisconsin and Michigan will allow a full paper ballot, a paper count, you know, ballot count by hand, hand counted, then I think we get a pretty good idea. And it's quite possible, I don't deny that it's possible, that the vote would come out pretty close to it. The polls, both the exit polls and the pre-election polls, are so far off that it casts doubt, but it's not proof. And I do think that if there is a honest effort to count the vote, at least in Wisconsin and in Michigan, we can at least determine whether or not it's the polls that were wrong or the vote count that was wrong.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, I'm not so confident. Yeah.
We need this information for future elections, just in order to be able to sort of determine which way things are going to go. I mean, I know that pollsters certainly are going to spend months, if not years, trying to understand what it was that happened. And David, as someone who has worked for many years in a very reputable polling company, the Gallup poll, what is your explanation? How do you make sense of all of this?
I tell you, it's a real shock. It's a real shock to all experienced pollsters that the polls could be that far wrong so consistently. Now, just remember, though, the polls were basically correct at the national level. At the national level, the final summary of all the polls showed that Clinton would probably win with around 4% of the vote. She now has more than 2 million vote margin, as you mentioned. It's climbing up toward 2%, above 1.5% to 2%. So then the polls could have been off by 1 point for each candidate. Maybe Clinton got 1 point less, Trump got 1 point more, and that would, so that's not bad at the national level. The real problem has been at the state level, and particularly in the battleground states. And you just wonder, how is it that the pollsters could have been so wrong in the battleground states and really pretty accurate nationwide overall? So, yeah, I don't know. There is no explanation. If it turns out that the vote count, the vote recount is pretty much essentially what the original count was, assuming they do a hand count of the ballots, then I think pollsters are really going to have to say, wait, we got a real problem here. How could we have been so far off?
Right, because these networks rely on accurate exit polling data to make their predictions. They end up looking really bad when their predictions are so far off from what actually happens. Now, of course, the other option is, so it's either that the polling that was done in some flawed way, or that somebody tampered with the vote counts. And, Donald Trump, in the lead up to the election, when it was looking like he was going to lose, maintained that if he lost, the election would be rigged. If it turns out that the election was in fact rigged, but rigged in his favor, we're talking about a fundamental break and fissure in the fabric of how this democracy works.
Absolutely. I should mention, though, that when Trump was talking about vote rigging, what he was talking about is a kind of what he called voter fraud, the notion that somehow thousands and thousands of people who aren't eligible to vote, either because they've already voted once or because they're not even citizens, somehow are coming to the polls and rigging the elections. That kind of voter fraud has been investigated and shown to be without merit. There's just, I think there were 9 or 10 cases out of over 1 billion votes cast where there was any significant evidence that anybody had done that. And there's just really so little incentive for an individual to do it because they can get caught, they can get prison, and one person's vote not going to make a big difference.
Right. But in fact, it's hard enough to get people to the polls. Forget about people who are not eligible. There's no reward for it, really, on an individual level to do it.
Exactly. But election fraud, where you can, through electronic measures, switch large number of votes in one direction or another, that is much more plausible and doable. And there have been plenty of examples where experts have shown how they can hack into a vote counting machine and change the results. And there have been all sorts of anecdotes about people who supposedly have used a touchscreen, voted for one candidate, and the other candidate is the one that actually got voted for that came up. So there have been a lot of glitches of this nature. Whether it's systematic or not, and whether there's somebody behind it trying to manipulate the election, we don't know. What we do know is that our voting machines are vulnerable, and that there's been a long history in this country of people trying to steal elections, and it goes all the way back to the founding of this country. So we know that that happens, and we just have to guard against it.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We will post a link to your article about the election from our website. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
My guest is David Moore, Senior Fellow with the Carsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire, former Vice President of the Gallup Organization and Managing Editor of the Gallup Poll. And his books include The Opinion Makers, An Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. He writes for iMediaEthics.org. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.